Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. Talking with TD. You are now rocking with me. I am your host, Teron Davenport. I got Elijah Campbell hitting the switches, making this thing work. We got a, you know, former Titans receiver special today. We got Chris Sanders, Run TMC, and we're going to go Nate and TD, the segment version of that. So Nate Washington coming on. I can't wait to hear the story, man. I saw him on Twitter, and it was a story that I said, I texted him. I said, man, I need you to share this on the show. So definitely make sure you check that out. But first things first, man, Jarrell Casey retired as a Titan. You talk about a forever Titan. That's one right there. So obviously, we're going to start out the show there and just shout him out. And one of the things that I always liked about Jarrell Casey was the realness. You know what I mean? And it was, and when I say the realness, I'm talking about a guy that you could just go up to in the locker room and you could talk. I talked to him about so many different things. Like, it wasn't always just football, right? It wasn't always just being upset about the losing streak to Andrew Luck. He's a very interesting man. And the things that he did off the field as far as working to reduce recidivism, working to help at-risk youth, he and his wife, Ryan, the Casey Foundation, remarkable. If there's an example, and I've said this about Kevin Byard as well, and as well as A.J. Brown, if there's an example of how a pro is supposed to be, like if you want to look it up in a dictionary or see a walking definition of it, Jarrell Casey, he's one of them. You know why? Because on every daggone play, you saw maximum effort from him. The willingness to come in as a youngster, feel out the organization, learn the organization, and then turn around and be the organization. That was him. That was him. And his legacy is going to live on here with the Titans through Jeffrey Simmons, through Kevin Byard. And through some of these other guys. I got to catch up with Derek Morgan. I was a friend of the show, so you know I got to shout him out. Coatesville in the building. Yeah, he was at Casey's retirement too. But I just think, you know, when you look at just what he was able to do with this team and toughen it out through those tough times and then being there for that AFC championship game, I mean, it was definitely – he's the example of how it's supposed to be. And it wasn't always pretty. As a matter of fact, before he came back here, well, you know, I'm not going to tell the story. I'll let Jarrell Casey talk about how he came back and he was able to mend the fence with John Robinson before he went ahead and retired.
Without his blessing, without his hard work and shaping me, creating me, I wouldn't be here. And the things that he installed in me, get that from my mother. She taught me to go out there and give everything I can. Her favorite saying and my uncle's favorite saying was always go out there and put the date in the dirt. If you don't know what that blank is, it's a little provocative. But that was a thing. And always drove that with me as I was going through my career. That was always something I always lived on, was go out there and bust your tail, go get after it. And I try to make sure I display that as much as I can. And to this last day, when I made this last decision in my career, it was a hard decision to come and want to retire, but after sitting down, talking with my family, and going through the last 3 years of injuries and dealing with different things mentally and things like that, it was the best decision for me and my family to pull away from the game and take our focus somewhere else. Me and my wife always talk about not letting the game become you. You making the game become your world. And I found myself kind of getting wrapped up in the game a little too much, not really focusing on what's outside to come. And now going forward, I think, you know, that's the best move for me and my family, trying to focus on life outside of football. I've done everything I possibly could inside this game, looked to be a Hall of Famer, looked to go bust my tail every week, looked to go get a Super Bowl ring. It didn't happen. Lord's, you know, Lord willing, to be a Hall of Famer, that definitely be a blessing to come. But, you know, for me, the game of football, pursuing to go get a Super Bowl, has come to an end. And, you know, the body itself told me what it's going to be, and I couldn't go out there and keep damaging myself and not be there for my family for the long haul. So I made the decision to go ahead and call it a quits. I called John up a couple weeks ago, I want to say about 3 weeks ago when I sat down and I talked to him and, you know, hashed out the differences that we had or whatever. It wasn't really much differences, more so my feelings and how I felt about the whole situation. But they kept open arms, you know. They said, you know, Cage, don't worry about none of that. You're a Titan for life, your family, and, you know, we love you over here. And I definitely thank y'all for that. That's definitely a blessing. Because me and my wife, we said, talk about that a lot. Like, damn, what the hell did I do? What the heck going on? But, you know, it's a blessing. And Lord, he works things in magical ways. And when I called Johnny, he opened up with straight joy. It wasn't like, what you doing calling me? It was straight joy.
So you hear that right there. I mean, obviously he wanted to retire as a Titan. He couldn't. I thought it was funny. He joked that, you know, he begged Robinson not to trade him. But, I mean, it is a business, so things have to happen. So definitely salute to Jarrell Casey. Only missed 5 games throughout his 9-year career with the Titans. He was a 5-time Pro Bowler. I like how Mike Keith kind of focused around that number 5, you know, and he had, what was it, 8 or 9 seasons of 5 or more sacks. The guy was, in my opinion, and even before I got here, I felt this, he was one of the most underrated players in the NFL. So, shout out to Jarrell Casey. Folks, let's get him in that ring of honor. I think he deserves to be there. And you know what, Mr. Monday Night, Keith Bullock deserves to be there too. The Freak deserves to be there. Javon Kirk.
Oh, yeah, I can get make a laundry list
guys.
Of names.
Yeah,
a
whole bunch
Samari Roll.
Hey, Chris Sanders, get my
yes.
guy in there. You know what I mean? So we could keep going. But I want to talk to Chris Sanders, actually, speaking to him. So we're going to pay these bills, and we'll come back. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call, and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Get it going. My guy Chris Sanders. We got to announce him properly, though. As the music fades away, the lights dim. And now, starting for your 1989 Detroit Pistons, at forward, number 4, Adrian Dantley.
Man, you know, you just had me change up my name for you. I was going to go with Samuel L. Jackson. I was going to hit you with that, but I just got another one. And now, starting for the Denver Nuggets, Alex English.
Amazing Grace. For those who don't know, I sing that because that's a movie that he had, Amazing Grace, you know, a little throwback.
Man, what's going on with you, man? Hey, this stuff is going crazy. Cut, people getting cut all over the league and
yeah.
You know, surprises, just crazy stuff going on, man. What's up with you?
Hey, man, you know, I'm just watching all this stuff go on, man. It is crazy with the cuts, obviously, you know, the big one. And, you know, let's go ahead and get into that. That's what we should talk today. Yeah. Let's talk about the cuts, man. And what's the biggest one to you?
What you talking about, Willis? We already know. We already know. Hey, I'm going with this, Patrick. And we were discussing some stuff off air that people need to understand. This is big now. I mean, I know, you know, that, you know, he got cut and everything, and I know it's disappointing and all this, but people don't understand how much he lost.
Yeah.
And could you go into that just for just 2 seconds, then we'll jump into it?
Well, I'll start it off this way, right?
Stop the fight.
I'm not even going to go there. You know what I mean? And this is something that I was thinking, like, as he was, you know, getting closer to not being on the roster.
Yeah.
And thinking about the money. And you know what it was?
What's that?
It's suicide.
Come on, man. Stop it.
But all jokes aside, man, It's a daggone shame.
It is.
It's a daggone shame because for those of you who don't know, right? So obviously the practice squad payment is a lot different than it is when you are a fourth round draft pick. So there was a big change in money for Des Fitzpatrick.
And the thing too is TD is we're not laughing that he got cut. We're just being funny because you know it's kind of hilarious. But I think if you look at the whole situation, is I don't think that he was cut because of his ability. I know everybody know he has ability. I know they saw something in him, but I just think that some of the things that he did was ticking Mike Vrabel off. And I'm gonna tell you a couple of things. When he was doing his interview, Mike Vrabel said two things. That sometimes he's not hustling and he's not blocking.
Yep.
The identity of this Tennessee Titans team is we're going to block. If you're not getting the ball, you're going to block and you're going to hustle.
Yep.
If the head coach is saying you're not hustling and doing those things, that leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Because if you look at all the receivers that are there, I know Fitzpatrick made had some bad practices and missed some plays and all that crazy stuff. But to let a fourth rounder go and you drafted up to get him, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that really goes to show you the level of disappointment, and I asked John Robinson about that, and he got into just it being a developmental situation. He mentioned Jeremy McNichols as a guy that, worked through the practice squad. He mentioned a few other guys, but none of them were a fourth-round pick.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the thing that you have to look at. I do respect John Robinson's ability to, hey, I messed up, you know what I mean, and admit that by releasing him. So that is something that is remarkable. If you remember, I was saying, I would keep him on the roster, but at the end of the day, there were seven guys. I personally feel there were eight, including Mason Kinsey, that made a better case for themselves based on what they did in camp, but then in Josh Reynolds, his overall body of work, his history, made a case for him. So that's a different situation.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is when Josh Reynolds was with the Rams, I mean, he can catch the ball, this and that. But now, they're depending on you more. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't have been depended on too much, for the Rams. So now you got a bigger responsibility. So I don't know how he's going to play. And if you look at the body of work of the receivers that kept showing up on film, who do we talk about every single week? We talk about McKenzie. We talk about Chester Rogers. How many catches did Reynolds have in the preseason? Zero. How many yards did he have in the preseason? Zero. How many touchdowns did he have in the preseason? Zero. So he's still an unknown to me, and I'm being very, very respectful when I say this. I'm not putting him down. I'm talking about the receiver, not the person. But the thing about it is I would have kept McKenzie over Josh Reynolds just because he keeps showing up on film, TD.
I feel what you're saying. I think the right decision, and you're not going to find a much bigger supporter of Mason Kinsey than myself.
Right.
But I think the better decision was to keep Josh Reynolds because I believe that as what happened, you would be able to push Kinsey through the waiver wire, put him on the practice squad. Yeah. Now he's someone that you have. So I think it was a breakup to make up kind of situation.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if they release Josh Reynolds, that's just a break. Like that's gone.
Yeah.
He's not coming back. So I kind of get where they're coming from there. And the thing with Reynolds, about the mystery part of it, the mystery to me is I'm always wondering when that Achilles is going to flare up.
See,
that's the mystery to me. And remember, he was out for a bit recently. He just came back the day after roster cut down. So it's still a situation in that is going to fluctuate, right?
And
God forbid something happens to him, but if it does, you have a Mason Kinsey to go to
right.
call up
Good
on
point.
The roster. So I think that was the case. I'm just amazed. I didn't think that they would be able to release Fitzpatrick and push him through.
That's crazy.
And get him back on the practice squad. And just to kind of get back to what we were getting at, so – as a member of the practice squad, and I'm not pocket watching, but I'm saying this so that people could understand the level of loss that this man
Absolutely.
Is facing. He's getting this year his base salary is going to be 165 $1,000.
What would have been if he would have basically made the team outright?
His rookie contract was 4 years, $4.2 million.
Oh man!
Think about what he lost.
Yeah. Ooh, that hurts because you know you always work to get to that point and you put yourself in that position to make that type of money. And everybody's different. It's not about the money. But here's the thing: if I was Fitzpatrick, I would be hot as hot sauce. Not at the organization, not at Mike Vrabel, not at J-Rob. I would put the chip on my shoulder and say, you know what? I got two choices, to get better or get better. If I get better, I'm going to mess up. If I get better, I master my craft. I understand how to get off the line of scrimmage, stacking guys, learning how to do chest over knees. What did I do to make the coach mad? And whatever I made him mad or didn't have confidence in me, I'm going to master that. So I just wish I had a chance to talk to him. Because I was in that situation, a while ago. Yeah, I got cut, but then I came back. But then the situation was kind of tough to where, you know what, you're going to cut me. I'm upset, all these things. So instead of me getting mad, I got better. So you know what, I'm going to play so well that you're going to have to play.
You got no choice. And here's the thing. What is the one thing that you always have control of on the football field or just in life, period?
Your attitude.
And your?
Desire.
And your?
I went to Ohio State. You got to help me.
Effort,
absolutely.
And when you're talking about a guy not running his routes, even though, and I was talking to Teresa Walker. No, who was it I was talking? I don't remember who it was.
Yeah.
But they were asking, they asked me, about running the routes. And I'm like, yo, even if it's a decoy route, like sometimes you don't want to run it. You know what I mean? You don't want, but you have to. You control your effort because you got to understand that that's a part of a bigger thing. As Coach Vrabel explained, if you have to bust it across the middle of the field to get the defense to go with you so that another route underneath can open up, then you just got to do it. But guess what might happen? They may not go with you, and the quarterback is going to give you the ball. So you always have to have that understanding that, no matter what, even if I don't have the football, I have to give maximum effort.
Yeah,
even if it's blocking, you have to give maximum effort.
Absolutely, because I remember I did a speaking engagement with Chris Hogan. I don't know if you remember him. He was a safety for the Tennessee Titans. He said this, and I'll never, ever forget it. It stuck in my mind. He said, why would I work all my life from little league to high school, and then I get to the pros and I start working?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Fitzpatrick was like that. I'm just saying that when I get to the league, I worked all my life to get there. Why would I stop working? Why would I stop mastering my craft? Why would I say, okay, I arrived and stopped? So if I was the head coach or the position coach of wide receivers, I would sit Fitzpatrick down. And just like I said before, I would look him square in his eyes. I said, the opportunity is in your hands. Success is in your hands. What are you going to do with it?
You know, I was listening to Eric Thomas this morning, the motivational speaker, while I was doing my run. And one thing he said when you just talked about Chris Hope and continuing to work. Eric Thomas said he could kill an alligator with his bare hands. And I'm running. I'm like, what is this dude talking about? But he said, if you attack an alligator after it eats, it's in a near paralyzed state. Because why?
I know.
It's satisfied.
Ooh.
You see what I'm saying?
Ooh.
So getting to the league, and I'm not saying that's the case with Des Fitzpatrick.
Right.
I'm not saying it at all. But getting to the league, yes, it's satisfying.
Ooh.
But don't be satisfied with just that.
Yeah.
Be satisfied be driven to be great. Don't just be a guy. Don't be a Jag, just a guy. Yeah. Be someone who stands out. And I think that is something that you have to think about when your effort is questioned.
Yeah, but look at Jerry Rice. Why is Jerry Rice the best receiver of all times? His effort.
Mm-hmm.
They said this, and this is a true story. After he won his first Super Bowl, they said the next day he was at the facility catching jugs and running routes.
See?
Because he wasn't satisfied. And everybody's like, man, Jerry Rice would always say this, nobody's ever going to outwork me.
Mm-hmm.
This is after the Super Bowl. You should be out there drinking AMBW root beer or drinking some prune juice or something. But he out there running routes and catching a jug. He wasn't satisfied, boss.
That's really what it comes down to. So I'm glad we got to get into that, man. I think that's that's relevant information and just analysis and yeah. outlook of it. There were some other cuts that kind of surprised me, or some other aspects of the roster. You know, I thought John Simon would make it, the outside linebacker. Was surprised he got released, but you know, end of the day, you have a guy in Rashad Weaver who's continuing to get better. You have a guy in Derek Roberson who's healthy, and Ola Adeniyi, I believe is how you pronounce it. he was something special too. So I get some of the moves, you know, the True. Things that happen. Obviously Fitzpatrick, like that one was just, that was a bombshell.
That was, that's it.
That was a bombshell. So, hey man, as always, I appreciate it. This is what we do. You know, we didn't stay as comical today, but I mean, I think it was necessary to have some real talk, you know?
Yeah,
so.
I mean, sometimes, because the thing about it is, before we can have real change, we got to be real. So sometimes we laugh and we joke, but man, we get to the nitty gritty. But this is something that I really believe that the listeners need to understand, that when you get to the NFL, it's a business.
Yep.
It's a business. If you don't do business, don't want to fight. Not to fight.
And on that note, yeah, those quotes never fail to satisfy.
Well, I appreciate
man.
You,
yeah, I appreciate you, man. Next week we'll be back. Hey, we'll have a game. We'll preview some stuff next week.
What's wrong with it, man?
Let's figure out a matchup to hone in on.
Let's do it.
All right.
This is Elijah Molden. I'm talking with TD.
No one man can stop me. Can I live? No front line to block me. Can I live? Or do I got to bring it to these kids? Can
All right. Live? Back from the break. I'm not going to call it Talking with TD, man. We're going to throw this thing back to 2020. The Nate and TD, we're going to call it the segment, the Nate and TD segment. That's right. Anytime you hear something from the locks or anybody that has to do with the locks, you know my guy is about to come on. And that's my man, Nate Washington. Nate, what's going on?
TD, always a pleasure, man. You know what time it is. Let's do it.
No doubt. I guess what we could do, because Jarrell Casey, he had his retirement. I know, you know, that was, you know, somebody that you connected to. When I say Jarrell Casey, right, and you think back on all your time together, what comes to mind?
Man, well, I'm going to be honest with you. Casey spent a couple nights at my house, man. We would be over at my house playing video games, laughing, talking, and he done be done passed out sleep. You know what I'm saying? We done went to practice the next day from my house. Like, vibe. Like, that dude has always been, like, genuinely humble, one of the hardest workers. And one thing that I can always say about him is, he was always hungry and passionate to leave his mark, not only personally, but as a team. He wanted to do something great with that, you know, two-tone blue. And he literally was the foundation of rebuilding what was or used to be in Steve and George's era. You know, unfortunately, you know, this just has to be truth told. And there was a long lapse of time that, you know, we weren't the expectation of what Eddie and Steve and you know, Albert and all those other guys brought to Nashville. There was a long lapse, you know, so it had to be rebuilt. It had, the foundation had to be recreated, and it had to start somewhere. And he was one of those pivotal guys on my way out to keep that foundation going in the direction that it needs to be to where it's at today, you know. And I know for a fact that came from his ambition to leave his mark personally and as a team.
Couldn't have said it much better than that. And yeah, congrats to Jarrell Casey. His retirement as a Titan was a pretty dope opportunity to talk to him and you know, see some of his teammates that were there. So I definitely enjoyed that. Spinning it forward, let's talk about chemistry. And I want to get your take just on Julio Jones and Ryan Tannehill. So obviously, as of today, September 2nd, Ryan Tannehill has not been removed from the reserve COVID list. If he goes through the whole 10-day process, it looks like it's going to be September 5th. They have a game September 12th. You know what I mean? Like, there's a game that soon. That being said, not many reps to be able to get that on-field chemistry. With you having been, you know, someone who built chemistry on the field with a quarterback, how significant is it to not be able to, you know, get that on-field work?
Well, I spoke briefly about this on Chase and Darren's show yesterday. And, you know, as a player, you know, a lot of times, oftentimes, we sit in the locker rooms and we read the articles and listen to the naysayers outside of the building questioning, you know, what we may have going on. And our first thought is, they don't know what they're talking about, you know. But this is a unique scenario, to be honest with you. I completely am aware of Julio Jones's outstanding career, what he's capable of doing today, his unique physical attributes, how Ryan has turned the corner from, you know, his situation in Miami to now establishing himself as a very reliable quarterback and someone that can take you far in the playoffs. You know, so these are two professionals that understand what they're going to need to do to get on the same page. But in the same aspect, it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time and experience. One of those things that I spoke briefly about yesterday with Darren and Chase was, you know, it's one thing to be in practice and have routes on air. It's one thing to, you know, run the top of the route tree for your quarterback and just let him put the ball on you so you can catch the velocity of how he throws. But it's a totally different scenario as an in-game live bullets are coming at you as a quarterback, understanding, you know, how much time you're going to have with your offensive line in certain situations with different matchups. You know, obviously facing the Texans is going to be different from facing the Rams. You know, that's two different, totally different defensive lines. And to have those in-game action, you know, type of situations or practice runs or experience with preseason is imperative because you need to not only, as a receiver, you not only need to understand your quarterback's habits when it comes to being in pressure and if he likes to roll left, if he likes to roll right, you know, those type of intricacies. But not only do you need to know that, but as well as which one of your offensive linemen is going to be the stronghold, which one of them is going to be the weak hold, and which, and when they face those matchups against your Aaron Donalds and your Khalil Macks on the outsides and your young group in Washington growing up, you know, when they face those difficult D lines, who and what side is going to hold up is imperative to know with your route running. You know, 12 to 14-yard curls sometimes may have to turn into 10-yard curls, you know, because that 2 yards is going to be the difference in you getting the ball or it being a sack. So those type of live in-game experiences are imperative. But I will say that, you know, back to the original point that these guys are professionals. Julio's been around for quite some time. Tannehill is now understanding that he can be a force within his position. And I think everybody on all ends, including Coach Brable and his coaching staff, will have a chip on their shoulder to come out and prove that Julio was a great fit. Julio will need to prove and will want to prove that he still deserves to be not only in this league, but to be recognized as one of the best to do it. So I'm pretty sure they'll get it done and accomplished as soon as possible, but it's definitely going to take time to get that done.
Yeah, and along those lines of wanting to prove that Julio is a superb fit, Whiteboard Wednesday is coming up by next week, and I got a little something, you know what I mean, to get him the ball immediately. So we'll get on that next week. But on a different note, so we go from Julio Jones, a future Hall of Famer, to Dez Fitzpatrick, and I want to talk about him because this is a fourth round pick. They traded up to get him, and he found himself not on the 53-man roster. If you were to talk to him, if you put your coach's cap back on, like you did when you were down there in Tampa, what would you say to Dez Fitzpatrick?
Well, here's the thing. I think essentially everybody that comes into the NFL or any professional sport in some form or fashion have been inspired by someone in front of them. I think the inspiration comes with a certain type of sense of urgency that, you know, of an expectation that you want things to work out in a certain form or fashion or manner, or you see yourself and your career being, you know, formidable to those that you looked up to. And a lot of times we put ourselves in situations where we tend to overlook the path and the journey that is designed for us. With that being said, it's just unfortunate that it's happened this way, but that doesn't mean that it's over. Mm. You know, there's been plenty of fourth-round draft picks that'll get cut, be put in this situation, and end up choosing the wrong decision because of their, you know, emotional status or mental, outlook on the game now because they've been cut. And those type of negative, you know, outlooks and those type of negative thoughts will do nothing but harm you. But if you can keep a positive attitude and understand now that there's a lot more work to be done, and anything's possible. He's in a great position. I think he did a good job by remaining with the Titans and not picking up another practice squad job elsewhere. Because here's the thing. When you stay at home with the organization that drafted you or assigned you as an undrafted free agent rookie, it puts you in a position of known, meaning that the organization knows what you bring to the table. They kept you around for a reason because you may be a good attribute for them, but the numbers don't allow you to remain on their roster. So therefore, at the very moment that there's an opening spot, an unfortunate injury, you know, an off-the-field issue, you know, these type of things happen in the NFL, and at the very moment that that situation occurs, now the organization can look in-house and not have to go outside. And you're right there understanding and still learning the playbook, still working with the guys, getting the chemistry in the practice time that you will be receiving, and still being able to grow in the locker room. I think that's essential. I think, you know, a lot of times, as I stated originally, you can't be focused on someone else's journey and how they made it in the NFL. Just because you're a fourth-round draft pick doesn't mean that you're going to make it. I came in with the fourth-round draft pick, and they kept me over our fourth-round draft pick that year. You know, so it's just a full journey of your own. I've known guys that have been cut and sent to NFL Europe only to come back and be cut two more times to only make themselves names eventually become, well, his art name was always this, but eventually your name is James Harrison, you know, and you're in the position that you're in now. So, I mean, everybody has a journey. Just because you get cut this time, it doesn't mean that you lost. You just got to grind. And, you know, when your time has come, be prepared to play, not to pout.
Stay ready so you never have to get ready. Before I get you out of here, I was on the timeline and I had to text you. Yo, I need you to tell me the story. So let's go ahead and get this camp story, man, because I want to crack up, man.
All right, so like I'll do my best to tell it quickly. I think it is going to be a little different hearing me tell it verbally.
Exactly.
But you know, it was my last year. And basically, going into camp, I was going to New England, and I talked to a friend of mine, Vince Wilford, and he was like, man, Nate, I'm going to tell you, that's not no place for no veterans. And I was like, well, at this point, if it's not good for me, then I'd rather be sent home by the team that's the upper echelon of football, you know. So I'm tired every day. Another friend of mine, he goes into camp, and he has the same mentality. He signs a one-year deal with the Giants, and he goes into camp like, you know, man, really, I'm just tired of this game. I'm really good. I'm just going to sign out. But, shoot, since they want to sign me to this one-year contract, I'm going to try to go and get as much money from them as I can. And I'm like, shoot, I feel, you know, I think at the end of everybody's career, it kind of turns into a business decision for everybody. You know, let's talk numbers and then we'll deal with this physical nature later. So, you know, each night of camp, you know, I'm not going to lie, like these text conversations with him, and sometimes we would have an opportunity to talk on FaceTime, were like the joy of the day, because the day would be so exhausting, not only physically, but just mentally. I was dealing with I had tore my quad the end of the season, the year prior. So I'm nursing that injury, trying to get back. And it's just like, man, every day I'm like, man, forget this. I can't take it no more. But when these had these conversations at night, we both would have each other dying laughing about how hard the day was. So I go into the facility. It's like week two, week three of training camp. And I go in the facility. They cut me. I'm like, I'm not going to lie. I respectively asked Coach Belichick the reason why they released me, but in the back of my mind, I'm really saying thank you for releasing me, because my hard-headed butt, I was going to keep coming back as long as they people, you know, teams wanted me around. And mm-hmm. I knew mentally I was just done with the game. So I get out of the facility and I leave. And I text my all my people that I was close to at that time, and I instruct them that I'm going home, I'm being released. So they don't just see it on ESPN like that. So he was one of them. Like, last ones I hit up, I'm like, hey, man, you know, I'm headed home. It didn't work out, you know, and they released me. So he's like, oh, man, you cool, like everything. I'm like, yeah, you know, it was just time. Everything worked out, you know, the way it should have been. I'm grateful for the time, and I'm honestly glad that I finally have an opportunity to sit down and enjoy my family. So go home, and I'm still checking in on him. He tells me, like, well, you know, I feel the same way, but I'm going to do what I can. I got to figure out something to do what I can so I can get a little more money out them. Like, they ain't bringing me up here for this. And I ain't going to get this, you know what I'm saying, these game checks. So I got to make this roster. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I feel you. You young. Go do your thing. You should still be giving your all, right? So last week comes around. Last preseason game comes around. I hit him back up, and I check in on him like, hey, what's going on? How's it going up there? Did you pull it together? How's camp been treating you type vibe? So he hits me back, and he's like, yeah, man. It kind of ain't working out good, you know what I'm saying? I think they going to cut me, so I had to figure something out. So I'm like, I hit him back. I'm like, what you mean? I had to figure something out. So he like, man, big bro, I went in there and told them people my shoulder was hurt. So I'm like, what? Why would you do that? Like, he like, so I talked to my agent, and my agent said, you know what I'm saying, as long as I'm hurt, they can't cut me when it's time for final cut day. Uh-oh. So I'm like, I don't think that's how that worked. But I'm like, shoot, worst come to worst, you give it a shot. So I'm like, what happened? He like, now they about to send me to get MRIs and stuff, and I'm going to see how it pan out. So the final day cut go by. Like, that next week come up, like, Tuesday after the final cut. That was, like, on Saturday. And I hit him back up. I'm like, how did it work out? He like, man, I'm still here. He like, they still, and all I'm doing is getting treatment right now. They ain't sent me home. They ain't said nothing to me. So I know they got to pay me, so I should be good. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Oh, so man. The week passes by. He texts me, like, all right, they're going to start rehabbing me a little bit. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He done pulled it off. Like, he now about to be getting these game checks because – the difference in the game checks and the workout checks was like, you get like $600 for a day for working out. So, you know, a week, that was really nothing. Like, you was getting, after taxes, you was probably getting like between $2,500 and $3,000. But the game check that he would have been receiving were around like $20,000, a little bit over $20,000. So, you know, his point was to get about, you know, a month's worth of game checks, which would have been around $80,000. So I'm like, that's a nice little scam there, buddy.
Yeah.
So I leave him alone. I don't say nothing to him. So week two, about the end of week two, he hit me up and was like, man. I'm like, what you mean? What's the issue? Like, you got in trouble? He like, nah. He like, man, they start sending me to rehab in the bubble away from everybody. He like, Nate, they is in here killing me, man. He said, I almost threw up today. He said, man, my knees buckled four times, man. He said, I know they seen me. He said, this was the funniest part. He said, they got me in this bubble away from everybody. Y'all tried to stick my head outside. They grabbed me. He said, they grabbed me. So I said, bro, how long are you going to tough this out? He said, man, I can't take it no more. He said, I'm going to see what's going on with this situation, and then I'm going to make my decision. So the next week, like Wednesday, he texts me like, I'm on my way to the airport. I'm like, oh, you told him you was healthy? He said, Nate, I had to. He said, I couldn't do it no more. He said, man, they sent me in the indoor facility to work out during their game. And I said, ooh, I said, they really trying to drag you. Right. He said, yeah, so I just told him I was healthy. So he comes home. I didn't tweet this part, but he was waiting on the checks to come in because they didn't send them right away.
Oh, man.
So it was about day four, and I'm like, I'm asking him. Now he's back around the corner. He lived around in the same neighborhood. So I'm like, hey, how did it work out? He's like, man, I still ain't got my checks. I'm about to call him and see what's going on. 2 days after that, I hit him again. He said, man, I really wasn't going to even tell you what happened, but, man, them people send me workout checks. Man, I lost it.
because he was so adamant about getting these game checks and right. knowing that he was getting away with this. And when they sent him the game check, if he could have went back up to that facility, he probably would have. That's how hard they were killing him in that rehab. So it was the funniest story I had ever heard. Man, I to this day, when I do talk to him, we still laugh about it. It was so funny at the time, and like to this day, me and him are still cool. It's funny.
That's hilarious, man. That's too funny, man. Well, yeah, man, I wanted to make sure that we got to hear that, and I like that. You know, that's an opportunity for the listeners to kind of go behind the curtains and see some of the stuff that goes on.
It's real, man. I mean, I'm not gonna drag it out, but you know, for the young guy facing that day, that final day and that cut day, you know, it's dramatic. You know, that's their lifelong dream. Mm-hmm. Then you deal with those guys that are in the middle of their career and they want to stay around, but they're not too much tripping. They've made enough money. They're good. You know, they go on and they live their lives, and it is what it is. Then you deal with the older guys, which was my tale, that's really just a veteran guy that knows each and every system, shows up, still loves to play the game, but doesn't have a problem with going home and sitting at home. So it's different tiers of understandings of guys, and to have a little bit of insight of what that final cut day looked like, because it's always, you know, the Grim Reaper for everybody. You know, everybody looks at it as a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, man, some people have some funny scenarios and situations that they've been in.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Nate Washington. We're going to do this from time to time throughout the season. And, man, like, I always appreciate you coming through when I need you, man.
No doubt, TD. You know what it is, man. Hopefully, we got that thing going on that, you know, we got planned and brewing for the people, man. That's where we'll keep it, man. But I'm excited and always here when you need me.
For sure. Appreciate it.